to me, this is like an interesting project of figuring out how do we give women that sense of safety and the support and the collaboration that we naturally get from the, you know, the women's culture, but also allow them to rise above the group and celebrate that and bring people up with them and know that when we see one woman's success, that we're right there next to her. That can also be our success. That can also be our example, and that we're not being left behind, and there's not a scarcity, and it's not like the top is going to get crowded and we're never going to get up there, which is kind of the underlying feeling for a lot of people behind the scenes.
Welcome to Captivate the Room with your host, internationally known voice expert Tracy Goodwin, an award-winning speaker who has taught hundreds around the globe to make a big impact with their voice. This podcast is for anyone who wants to step onto a bigger stage, make a bigger impact, and have a voice that makes people listen. Presentation matters, and the voice is the missing link. Join in and you'll see why.
Welcome, everyone. I'm so glad to have you with me today. I've got a great episode for you talking about business and intuition and strategy and combining all the things to make you successful with Carrie Hamm. I'm going to tell you a little bit about her. She's a business strategist and intuitive coach who helps visionaries, entrepreneurs, change makers, and creatives break through barriers to land their next big leap. She combines her intuitive gifts with 20 years experience in business technology and 20 years of intensive spiritual practice to help people activate the energy and mindset needed to hold massive expansion. She specializes in demystifying mysticism to find the practical in the magical. I've had the opportunity to work with Carrie. I met her through another program where I went and I did a workshop, and then she came over and worked in my program. And she's just the greatest gal and such a unique combination of skill set and talent. I think you're going to find our conversation very beneficial and incredibly interesting. She brings so much great stuff to the table. And really, I love that line that is in her bio. And I know that she talks about this a lot, that specializing in demystifying the mysticism and finding the practical in the magical. And I really think that encapsulates who she is and what she does so extraordinarily well. I know you're going to love to hear everything she has to say today. So let's head on over to the show. Carrie, welcome to the show. I'm so glad to have you with me.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you on the show. And I can't wait to dive in and talk about all the amazing things that you do.
Thank you. Thank you. It's going to be a fun time.
So actually, I like to start at the beginning. Now, you don't have to go all the way back to birth, but which some people have done, and that's totally okay. But you do some very unique work now, and I know you've had an interesting path to get to that work. And so I'd like to basically say, tell us where you started and tell us where you are now in relation to the work that you do, and anything relevant in there that you feel you want to add in.
Okay, cool. So right now I'm a business strategist and intuitive coach, which is kind of a funny mix. And sometimes I tried on like intuitive business strategist and that didn't quite work. But kind of going back, I mean, if we go all the way back to birth, like I am originally from Alabama, which has its own interesting, like cultural, like milieu in there, like the soup that I came from. But I grew up thinking that I was going to be an artist and planned to do that all the way until I was in high school, planned to go to like a really great fashion design college. And that was like the trajectory I was headed on. And I ended up instead going into technology. Because I could, because I was one of those people who back when they had Commodore 64s, had one in school and they taught us how to program. And that was like something that we had to learn to do. And I hated it with a passion. And so, but you know, like way back then, I was one of the only people who had had their hands on a computer by third grade. And so I kind of came up in the world knowing how to use computers and despising it. And by the time I, you know, had come out of college and I was kind of out in the world on my own and needed to make sure I could pay rent and eat, computers were looking really, really attractive. I kind of got drawn in, and often as women do, drawn in by, I need your help. I need your help. And you know how to do this and I don't. And so, you know, I was going where I was needed and doing what people needed me to help them do. And so I had a solid, you know, 20 to 25 years in technology. And, you know, and looked up one day and I was, you know, in my early 40s and was like, what am I doing?
What happened here?
Exactly. I don't exactly love this. You know, I really love the mental challenge of it, but there were so many places where I really felt unfulfilled. And so like I had worked for all kinds of companies building software, you know, like small nonprofits to working at Microsoft on and off for about 8 years. And in my last job at Microsoft, I just kind of hung in there and I was like, I'm going to stay here until I figure out what I'm going to do next. And I wasn't really sure. So really, it took a lot of peeling back the layers to figure out what I wanted to do next. And so I went and started a startup, you know, like you do, and was building an app for people with food allergies and dietary restrictions. And around that time, I started working with women in this women's co-working space I was in. And I figured out that I really, really loved working with entrepreneurial women. And they were really wanting coaching more than they wanted consulting. And so that's kind of how I shifted over into coaching. But really, it's been in the last year or so that I realized that the intuitive work that I was doing with people was really dominating. And I've always been intuitive. It's one of those things that, you know, you know that you lean on heavily early on. You don't really talk about it to people, but it had always figured very prominently into my career, just, you know, knowing that I was using those skills all along. But I really spent part of last year focusing on those skills and honing them because they were so important to these people who were just starting their businesses and they had a tremendous amount of indecision. And they were getting a ton of advice off of the internet and from courses they had been in. Mm-hmm. And very often that advice was kind of leading them in the wrong direction for who they were energetically. And so realizing that that piece of my work was really essential was what led me to start saying, okay, the intuitive coaching is really like first and foremost, even more essential than just your business strategy, because energetically, we have to understand what it is that we're building, you know, emotionally, energetically behind the scenes before we get into, oh, what kind of funnel am I going to build? What's my next strategy? You know, this was the core of the work.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. And I love that you said you knew that intuition was a big part of it. See, I knew that from a little girl. But I thought, okay, this is crazy. Did you have that same, when you realized that you were an intuitive, and we might want to give your definition of that for the listeners, but did you wrestle with that at all? Did you, because I know I sure did.
It was one of those things that we knew in our home. So my mother was incredibly intuitive and like she would have dreams about things before they happened. If I did anything wrong, she would find it within minutes. I mean, it was really crazy. So like we had this joke amongst my friends, like they were like, oh, don't do anything wrong at Carrie's house because her mom always knows. So that it was kind of like this well-known secret, but it was not something that we talked about, you know, to the wider outside, like the public. And so, so I kind of grew up knowing that it was like the normal secret.
Yeah.
And it was fine for it to function behind the scenes. And I grew up like with a really strong interest in spiritual things. You know, I was like really into astrology by the time I was 12 years old and was running around talking to people about that. But I did not bring it, you know, out into business. People really did benefit and, you know, and always came to me seeking advice of what is happening behind the scenes. What do you see is coming up next? But it wasn't something that I ever led with, especially not, you know, in the corporate world. And you know, and there were times when I really needed to kind of bring that out, like, hey, something major is coming up here and we need to be aware of it and get in front of it. And it was really interesting to watch the looks on their faces when they were like, no, that can't happen. And boom,
oh,
it
wow.
did, you know. So it kind of was always there and I was always using it. I just hadn't ever like put it out. And it was hard to put it out into the world and say, okay, I'm waving this flag now. Totally different.
Oh, yeah, I get it. Well, you know, I didn't coach the way I do now for years. I coached straight technical, you know, speak louder, do this, do that. And the whole time knowing in my mind, okay, you are not telling them this is a train wreck, Tracy. And it feels like it was kind of the same thing, that almost this, I know what's going to go down. And so the inner struggle was real. I got to say this. Right. You know, but it's interesting. I could be wrong and I could be making an assumption, but the intersection between intuitiveness and tech, does that go together?
Somebody asked me this the other day and I thought it was interesting because the bridge between being an intuitive and being someone who works in technology, especially for programmers, the need to have a quiet mind, one that can get focused, because people who are programmers have to have really strong mental control and they have to be able to focus for long periods of time. And you know, I can talk all day about the various shades and nuances of types of focus, but you get into a space where you are being creative, you are being quiet, you've quieted everything outside, and you're letting other stuff start to sort of float in. And to me, that is really like the core of what intuition is you're outside of that normal, everyday, squawking ego mind. And we are sort of in touch with what feels external. Now, whether or not that's actually external is really immaterial to me. What I know is it is outside the boundaries of what I consider my normal everyday mind. And this is kind of where creativity comes from. In my perspective, it's where some people think guidance comes from. It's just like, it's not part of your everyday faculty. And I really love the way Malcolm Gladwell sort of touched on a crossover when he, in his book Blink, talked about how powerful our subconscious minds are at tracking information and handling tremendous nuance. And I think intuition also sort of falls into that category. And for people who don't understand intuition and think it sounds like some kind of, you know, woo-woo hooey stuff, there is this place to access it from the perspective of, hey, your subconscious mind is massively powerful and contains multitudes of what you have seen and heard and interpreted. And you don't always have access to that from your conscious mind.
And I guess that in my mind, when I make that assumption, and it really is, it's an assumption and it might even be a judgment, because I know that in my own work, I think we talked about this the other day, what to call ourselves, and it, right? You know, and it's like, what do you do? Oh, well, I tell people the seven layers of their voice that they don't know exist. Okay, a professional, you know, is going to go, okay, well, hold on, right? And so I bet it was interesting to own this in that space.
Yeah. And I always love to see how you do it, because when people actually work with you, like, they see how intuitive it is, and it almost feels like a magic trick. But with me, it's usually I start working with someone and I still struggle with how much do I tell people before I start working with them that, you know, up front, this is heavily intuitive work, because what I'm doing is the only way I can describe it, and again, you know, it's through my filters, is kind of reading someone's energy. So while they're talking about things they like, they don't like, what they're doing, what's coming next, there is, you know, there starts to feel like a certain flow of, this is the way it wants to move. This is the way you tend to express yourself. And when you're really, really fired up, this is how it's coming out. And letting people see that and hold that sort of shifts the way that they start to approach things, because they often will come out of that center and now they're off over here and everything's hard and I'm grinding and trying to do this difficult thing. And so letting people see and feel what their real sort of center is and how to amplify it and harness that is really at the core of the work that I'm doing. And I see a lot of crossover between you and I in how that works, because you are using the instrument of the voice to kind of get to that same thing. Because when I was working with you, and I've said this many times, it's not that you made me different. It was peeling away all of the layers that I had layered on of just stuff I had taken on from other people or stuff I thought I needed to do or just stuff I was afraid of.
Well, yeah. And that's so common for people to say, okay, you gave us stuff, but what you really did was you took away everything we didn't need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And do you find that a lot of people work off center?
Yes.
Everybody? Like everybody? Yeah.
I rarely run across people who are fully, you know, even if we can say it this way, like there's being centered in who you are, and then there's really being amplified. So when you see people often who are really, really inspiring and they're really like these great visionaries and they just have people flocking to them, those people are both on center, like they're really centered in their own power and they are amplifying it in a big way. And so like, we can't amplify something that is off center. It feels like almost like to me, I experience it almost like crimped energy. Like somebody put a metal around you and just went,
yeah.
And you can't,
you can't
do much with that. And so you're always pushing against something that's unnatural, the unnatural expression of who you are and kind of the way you flow. And so for some people that's like light and bubbly and fun. And for some people that's like really calm and centered and gentle, and for them to try to just, you know, barge out there and do something totally different, like for the sweet bubbly person to decide, hey, I'm a badass rebel this week, you can explore that, you can pull those elements in, but if your natural expression is a different way and someone's telling you have to dominate and lead with a different energy, it doesn't work for you. It uses more energy that you don't have, you know, running in the wrong direction.
So it really is like that. I talk about that best version of you, and maybe you have a dominant shade. Maybe you are more inclined to push or pull or loud or fast, but you want to roll all the bits in, even if you have that dominant bit. Am I getting that right?
Absolutely. Because you're also, when you're doing that, you're creating connections for other people, you know, like even if we have a dominant way, that's not all we are.
Right.
It's just that's our center. And so we'll always kind of bounce back to our center depending on, you know, what's going on or what we're doing. But especially when we're kind of rolling with all of those shades and those bits, we're allowing other people to find themselves in what we are. It's almost, I always see it as like a switchboard. They're plugging in somewhere, you know, we've created an opening and they can plug in. Right.
Yeah. And that's a really great analogy. I love that. And that's that connection point. Like I might say, okay, loud, they might not connect to, but quiet, they might.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, oh, very absolutely. Interesting. Very interesting. Well, you know, I know that I've heard you talk about this a lot, and I really didn't even, you know, I kind of have a loose list of things to have a conversation about, but I forgot how well you speak to women and their voices and their energy, and how much we could stand to do more shifting in that area. And as you're talking, I'm thinking about women. I mean, I work with both, but women specifically fighting against those societal implications that say you have to be this or you're this. And do you find that women have a harder time fully owning their true center, their true, the strength of who they really are, or no? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I think if they have started down the road of doing that work and realized that there's something there, It can be uncovered pretty quickly, but the vast majority of women have really been conditioned, not even just by society, because I think we often say it's society, and that's kind of an amalgam of, you know, like the expectations of tradition and our parents and, you know, all of these other facets that come in. But the key pivot point that I see is you can watch it happen in adolescence. You can watch it happen in middle school, where, you know, and even kind of later elementary school, where there is this division that happens between boys and girls, and women are very much expected by the collective culture of young girls to conform and to keep everything within this really tight band of expression. We're going to dress alike. We're going to walk alike. We're going to wear our hair the same way. We're going to go to all the same places, and no, you can't be different. And no, why are you doing that? You know, like, and there's this tall poppy syndrome comes up again and again. Like, if someone is really above the crowd, going to get their head chopped off. People are going to knock them down. If they're below the crowd, they're going to get picked on. So it's kind of like stick to the middle and you are part of a collective and we are moving as a unit. And boys are very much, they grow up the opposite. They start right away with bantering with each other and, you know, constant, you know, bragging and knocking each other down and laughing and getting back up. And even if a boy is frustrated with that dynamic, he is surrounded by that dynamic again and again until he learns to manage in it or he learns to withdraw. So it's not like everybody, you know, fits into these boxes. It's that these are usually the it's the soup they're in. And so they learn to adapt to it and they learn the rules. And so if they, you know, so when we come back together in the working world, the boys are still operating from the perspective of, oh, I have to be bigger. I have to be louder. I have to get my point across first. And the women are looking for consensus. Oh, I'm going to say this little thing. Do you agree with me? Do you not? I'm just going to barely put it out there and I want you to pick it up and run with it. And this is the conditioning that really keeps women from being able to rapidly succeed in the career world, because most of the career worlds were made for men. What's so interesting now is we have so many people who are creating groups of women, you know, out there in the online world. And what's very interesting is we kind of go back to that dynamic of middle school when it's just a group of women. We're now, again, barely, you know, touching out. And so to me, this is like an interesting project of figuring out how do we give women that sense of safety and the support and the collaboration that we naturally get from the, you know, the women's culture, but also allow them to rise above the group and celebrate that and bring people up with them and know that when we see one woman's success, that we're right there next to her. That can also be our success. That can also be our example, and that we're not being left behind and there's not a scarcity and it's not like the top is going to get crowded and we're never going to get up there, which is kind of the underlying feeling for a lot of people behind the scenes.
Well, I would think so. I would think based on the proof that, you know, we've seen some proof. And so people are working from that place far too often, which is unfortunate. That needs to be changed for sure. Mm-hmm. And definitely maybe need to think about getting that teen program rolled out, right?
Yes. Oh my gosh. Can you imagine if people in the teen years, while they're still like so malleable, could get that training and like it really like see behind the curtain in that way.
Oh,
that
yeah.
Really phenomenal.
Well, it would save them so many years of suffering and suffering alone sometimes, because I know when I work with people, very often they feel like they're the only ones that can't seem to show up and use their voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's almost like a cognitive bias out there of whatever I see in the collective is the norm. And, you know, whatever I see in myself is a problem.
Yeah.
Like I always like point this back to like when I was in middle school, I was like, everybody has all the great clothes. Everybody has all the great clothes. And it's like, and I have, you know, this one or two pieces. And really, like, if you went to those people individually, well, this person has a great piece, and this person has a great piece, and this person has a great piece.
Right.
And that's the way it is, you know, in business and, you know, career success too, is every person has some area where they've been working, where they are generating some success, and they have their struggles. And when we're in our struggle, it seems to feel like that's all there is just us and our right. struggle. We're the losers.
Right. Right. And did you that you were in a, and well, again, here I go assuming, but I would think that in the tech world, that is more male dominated.
Yeah. Oh,
is absolutely. That's an accurate assumption.
Yeah, the tech world is heavily, heavily male dominated. And so, like, I spent most of my career just almost exclusively working with men. And and there was kind of an attitude among the women of, I'm keeping my head down and I'm doing all the things I have to do, and don't talk to me and don't look at me. And like, get, and so they really had to encourage women, especially at Microsoft, hey, we want you to kind of support each other. And so they were like, fine, I will take an hour out of this day and I will run a meeting for the women.
You know? Oh, wow.
So it's really interesting to like flip from that into being in an entrepreneur's co-working space where everyone was like, we are all intentionally going to be very supportive of each other. Because we have to, we need to. Mm-hmm. And you know, it was a very different dynamic because in the corporate world, it was like, nope, I might be the only woman who gets promoted to, you know, this position. And, you know, they know they have to promote somebody and it's got to be me.
You know? Wow.
So like coming away from that, because I think, you know, the more there is that scarcity, the more it perpetuates it. Mm-hmm. And it stops us from focusing on the things that really need to be focused on for people to have that expansion and get ahead. And I say ahead, like there's hard to even use words that don't feel competitive.
Right.
But to have more impact and have more responsibility, we need to be able to have more impactful relationships. We need to be able to be more genuine, because even inside a corporate machine, human beings make the decisions. They might tell you that they're making them based on statistics and numbers and things that are showing up in your review, but ultimately human beings are driven emotionally, and they will later go find reasons for what's happening emotionally.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. It's all about feeling. It really is ultimately about feeling. And the reason I ask that question is I'm you know, like I mentioned in the intro, Carrie's worked with me, and I'm curious, did you struggle to use your voice in the corporate world, or did you struggle to use your voice out of the corporate world and when you got into your own thing, or did you ever struggle to use your voice?
Yeah, I really did tremendously. So I was petrified of giving presentations, and I would fumble through my presentations. And I was, as you talk about, you know, tentacles out, like constantly seeking feedback from people, and being someone who is an intuitive and who is an empath, like that was my way of showing up in the world, is let me put my feelers out through all of these people and feel what's going on here and read what's happening. And reading every little nuance of, they didn't like that, or you responded this way. And it was crippling for me to be able to speak. In fact, really early in my career, I was a corporate trainer. And I was like, this is going to be really fun. It was kind of like a hybrid job between being like a functional analyst who is helping the programmers build the program and also training people. So I was about 23, and it was all good. Like, I was really nervous. I was learning to speak. I was learning to, you know, like give presentations. I had done all of my curriculum, and the first time they put me in front of a room of 50 people, and I saw all those eyeballs on me, and I could, it was like a book had opened on every person right in front of me, and all just kind of got shoved into my system at one time. And I thought I was going to throw up because I could feel too much from everybody. And I was so lucky that I had practiced again and again and again at that point because I was almost crippled otherwise. And so I could do it almost on autopilot, but I just was sick for almost the entire time we were doing those trainings because I didn't know how to pull back. And that was like one of the first and most critical lessons that I learned from you was you don't need to, you don't need to be feeling what all those people are feeling and seeing what all those people are thinking, like to stay centered in myself. And I still have to work on that some, but that was game changing for me to stop reading the room.
Well, I'm glad to hear that because at first I was got to thinking that must have been a nightmare. Mm-hmm. If that had been, you know, you must have been so disappointed to show up and hear me say, yeah, we're not being tentacles out anymore. Right? Like, what? How do I, you know, because I get that. And we had a conversation just yesterday or recently about that picking up other people's energy and mm-hmm. how you really, that can change your mood in a minute, right? Mm-hmm. You have to be, but that's your gift too, right?
It is. And what's very interesting is the more people I talk to who consider themselves empaths or highly sensitive people, there has usually been in their lives early on some sort of trauma or some sort of disconnect from the parents so that they were very hypervigilant and had to constantly read people to assess whether or not they were safe. Mm. And so I think most people probably have this capacity. But if there wasn't a need to turn it on early in life, then maybe they just never did. And so it doesn't feel like a normal sense to them. But for those of us who had, you know, maybe parents that didn't communicate a lot or were not very demonstrative or, you know, just sort of kept to themselves, or people who had dangerous situations at home where they had to really watch and read the situation, these are the people that I see usually come out with this tremendous ability to read others, but the curse is that they're always reading others. And so the emotional stability is affected by everyone else's feelings. And so usually, you know, when we talk about those people setting boundaries, the first thing is you're fine without reading everyone. Mm-hmm. Like that is mm-hmm. one of the first things we have to understand is this is a skill that you need in dire situations and on everyday basis. Like don't do this to yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how would somebody know, would people, like I knew I could hear voices in my head. would people know if they're intuitive?
It was interesting. Somebody else asked me this and I really felt like we know because the logical mind will tell us what's logical.
Right.
And so we know what the logical mind says because the world accepts that. You know, we know to operate that way. Mm-hmm. And when you're intuitive, you will consistently get certain advice that goes against the logical mind and you'll be like, oh, but the logic says this, I can't do that. And then you turn out to be right. And then you turn out to be right. And after right enough times, you're like, okay,
this is
clearly a superior skill to my rational brain. Therefore, I need to listen to it. And so I think the more intuitive people are, the more they know it's true. And I, being a very, very rational person who really values my rational mind, still struggle with the intuition. And it really took me like practicing that for a while and saying, I'm going to go with this first. Just to test it out, you know, being rational and wanting to experiment.
Yeah.
And it was really phenomenal. It's so funny because my partner is like hyper rational and not really like, he doesn't touch in any intuitive stuff. And it's hilarious because we'll be like riding down the road and he's like, well, we're going to go this way because this, you know, this makes sense. This is the right way to go. And I was like, I don't have a good feeling about that. I feel like we need to go this way. And he's like, nope, we need to. I'm like, okay, you know, kind of go back and forth. And I was like, we'll do it your way and see what happens. And so this is a fun game for us. And I always win.
I was going to say, I bet you always win. I bet you always win. So now, how do you take this intuition? And because I know we're going to run out of time and I want to get a better feel for, you work with women.
At this point I work with men too, but mostly women. And it's because there's, just often women have more of a natural inclination to this kind of work.
And what, right? Okay, so maybe they're, well, I was going to say maybe they're a little more open to it, but maybe it's more, they're a little more familiar with it.
Very possibly both, yeah.
Right. But now how do you take this work and help them? I know that's like a big question, but you teach them to tap into that intuition? Is that what I understand?
As of right now, and no. Sometimes people do ask me that, like, how do I tap into my own intuition? And so a lot of the people that come to me are often already very intuitive.
Okay.
But the biggest thing that I do with them in terms of intuition is to help them see that core of themselves and kind of holding that light for them and saying, you know, here's where your center is. Cause they will go away and they will be so excited. Like when they finally see it and they can kind of see, like, cause there's that seeing the center of themselves and how it gets amplified and then seeing really like calibrating what their best work is to that. Cause sometimes they've got an offer they're putting out or they've got a business that they're running and the business is really not aligned to that center. And so we're looking at how do we get, because, you know, it's kind of like you're looking for a full circuit. You're looking for, here's me in my full energy. Here's the business that I'm running through and it does not slow me down or create any obstructions. And then now there's the audience or the people that I'm selling to, whether it's a product or a service, and we've got a full circuit loop going. And they really like always, well, oh, but I have to do it this way. Or, oh, I definitely have to grow this direction. And they have all these ideas of how it has to be done. And kind of holding a vision for them of here's where I see a full circuit. And then they feel it. They can feel when they're in it, the energy just, you know, is off the charts when they have kind of opened it all up and they're really aligned. And they're like, that's amazing. I'm going off to do that. And they just charge forth in that direction and start going until the mind starts to take them off track again. And so for me, it's often kind of coming back to and holding that, you know, place for them of here's where you are in your, you know, brightest, shiniest version of you. And let's look at how to kind of get above the maze and see your way from here to there rather than, you know, like a video game player just knocking himself into the wall again and again.
Yeah. That's super exciting. I've known you all these months and now I fully get it. That's very, very exciting. And I don't mean that like you've not explained it. I mean it, you know, because I don't even know that I've ever asked you to fully explain it like that. But that's really exciting work, Carrie. That's really, I can only imagine the lives you're able to change.
It's really amazing when we can get hold of people who have a big vision. And that's really the people that I like to work with are people who are like, I want to do this crazy thing. Mm-hmm. And showing them that first off, they usually don't even have that thought unless it is a possibility for them that they have that in them. And then showing them the path to it where it's like all lit up and it now is like a runway. It is really exciting to see them just go. Rather than, you know, dithering in indecision and frustration and imposter syndrome.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's amazing. And now how, I know you've got some rebranding and things going on, but if people are interested in working with you, and I know I had told you I want to talk about Clubhouse. I'm going to have you back on the show. We'll have a whole Clubhouse discussion episode, but if people want to work with you, what is the best way? Where should we send them?
So I am on Instagram at the Alchemy Channel. And I just got my new website up. So it's at Carrie Ham, so carrieham.com. And my Facebook is Carrie Laham, LAHAMM. And so like any of those places you can find me. And I'm also on Clubhouse. Like that's really the place where I'm connecting with people most right now. And it's at Carrie Ham on Clubhouse. And if people are not there yet, I highly, highly recommend it for making really strong bonded connections to your audience. It's just a great space.
Okay. And we'll put those links in. I'll put those links in the show notes, but yeah, Carrie, I'm definitely going to have you back to have a conversation about Clubhouse. We need to have whole, like that's the whole dedicated episode. And we'll just have a conversation about connection and Clubhouse and all of that. I think that would be great. That would be great. But this was great too. Thank you so much for being with us today. I really enjoyed having you here and enjoyed this conversation.
Me too. It was really fantastic to dig into all of this, and I appreciate it.
Yeah. And you guys check Carrie's workout. She is truly amazing and such a joy to be around. Check her out on Clubhouse. And I will circle back and have that conversation when I can get her on, when I can get her over here again. But that's it for today. I'm going to go ahead and wrap it up. And until I see you next time, you know what to do. Get out there and speak your truth. Just do it beautifully.
Thanks for listening to Captivate the Room with Tracy Goodwin. You can reach out to her at captivatetheroom.com and be sure to grab the Voice Formula, a free video series that will help you start making a bigger impact with your voice today. If you've enjoyed this episode, please leave a review on iTunes.